Now, have a look at this second proof and see if you think it has any force. How does the proof go? Like this. The three parts of the soul seem to me to have three forms of pleasure, one for each individual part. Likewise, three forms of desire and three forms of rule. Can you explain that? The first element, we say, is the one which allows a man to learn. The second, the part which allows him to act in a spirited way. To the third, on account of its diversity, we found it impossible to give its own unique name, so we gave it the name of its largest and strongest element. We called it desiring, because of the strength of its desires for food, drink, sex, and everything that goes with these, and money-loving, because money is the principal means of satisfying these desires. And we were right, he said. So, if we were to say that the thing it took pleasure and delight in was profit, would that be our best way of concentrating our argument under one general heading? Would that make it clear to ourselves what we mean when we talk about this part of the soul? And if we were to call it money-loving and profit-loving, would we be justified? Well, I certainly think we would. What about the spirited part? Can we say, by contrast, that its sole and constant aim is power, victory, and reputation? Yes, we can. So if we called it a lover of victory and a lover of honour, would that be appropriate? Absolutely appropriate. And, of course, it's obvious to anyone that the part we learn with is entirely and constantly intent upon knowing where the truth lies, and that of the three it is the least concerned with money and reputation. Easily the least. Would it be in order, then, for us to call it a lover of learning and a lover of wisdom? It would. Very well, I said. Is this the ruling element in some people's souls, and is one of the other two elements, it could be either, dominant in others? Yes, he said. Does this explain why we say that there are three fundamental human types, the lover of wisdom, the lover of victory, and the lover of profit? Of course. And three classes of pleasures, one corresponding to each type. Exactly. You realise, I said, that if you took the trouble to ask three people of this sort, one after another, which of these lives is the most pleasant, each would sing the loudest praises of his own. Certainly the money-maker will say that in comparison with profit, the pleasures of honour and learning are worthless, unless there is something in them which can make money. True. What about the lover of honour? I asked. Doesn't he regard the pleasure which depends on money as sordid, and the pleasure which depends on learning, except to the extent that learning brings reputation, as a load of hot air? He does. As for the lover of wisdom, or philosopher, I said, what view do we imagine he takes of the other pleasures, compared with the pleasure of knowing where the truth lies, and always enjoying some similar sort of pleasure while he is learning it? Won't he regard them as far inferior? And won't he call them truly necessary or compulsory, since, but for necessity, he could go on perfectly well without them? Yes, he said, we can be confident this is his view.